When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. Today.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. So there he goes again and again. Joe Biden's student loan bailout, a never-ending illegal vote-buying ploy that never works. Senator Eric Schmidt will talk about all that in just a little bit. Another big market crash today. The Dow's tanking by about 500 points on higher inflation. No rate cuts and a little thin J.P. Morgan earnings. We've got Kevin Hassett to weigh in. Meanwhile, Sarah Carter on inflation and North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum on the fossil fuel war. But first up, Mr. Edward Lawrence, live at the White House with more on student loans and other matters. Edward.
Yeah, and you know what? It's the attorney generals, most of them that are suing President Joe Biden now because of his student loan bailout plan, say that it amounts to a vote-buying scheme. Now, seven states filed new lawsuits in order to stop the president from loosening the ability to relax the rules for that vote-buying scheme, according to them. Now, President Biden wants to include about 30 million people now in all Americans for this bailout. There you see the states there. That would balloon the cost if he gets these 30 million included. Already existing changes to these programs cost taxpayers $153 billion and forgave loans for 4.3 million people. Republicans say voters won't be fooled.
Bidenomics is not working for the American people, and they know it. And, you know, this election is going to be about the economy, and it's going to be about border security. And Americans see that Joe Biden is not leading, is failing on both issues.
A student loan bailout will add to the federal debt because the president has no offsets. So eventually the people with the loans being forgiven will have to pay. The president losing ground with young and minority voters. So this was his pitch today.
A promise kept to invest in historic $7 billion in HBCUs, to relieve student debt for more than 4 million people so far, including a significant number of black borrowers. Including just today, I announced another 277,000 Americans. A significant number of black borrowers are also having their debt forgiven.
Yeah, the president has signed into law $7 trillion since he's been in office. And this student debt forgiveness plan, that is not included in that number there. So it would increase the debt even further. Larry?
All right, Edward Lawrence, thank you very much. They can't even do that, right? Now, actually, on this point, a couple more points for me. There he goes again and again. Just this morning, President Biden announced another $7.4 billion in student debt bailouts for 277,000 borrowers. This comes to $153 billion in proposed student debt cancellations, would cover about 4.3 million people. Of course, last June 23rd, the Supreme Court ruled that Mr. Biden does not have the authority to cancel student loans. In a 6-3 decision entitled Biden versus Nebraska, it specifically struck down use of the so-called 9/11-related HEROES Act for student loan cancellations. The court ruled against the president's executive order because it lacked a clear mandate from Congress to be used outside of national emergencies. This was somewhat similar to the Supreme's decision in West Virginia versus the EPA that ruled against extraordinary executive orders regarding fossil fuel and other climate-related cancellations without a specific congressional mandate. These latest rounds of student loan cancellations were based on the SAVE plan, which purports to regulate income-related loan payments, but this, too, likely to be struck down by the Supremes because the executive lacks a clear congressional mandate to cancel the loan and the interest payments altogether. Now, the interesting thing about all this is that Supreme Court decisions have been written in English, right? Clear English. It is our mother tongue. Most people understand it. Even President Biden purports to. And yet, As he has said several times, he doesn't care what the Supreme Court says and wants to go ahead with it anyway and cancel $153 billion worth of student loans. Now, if you think this is unconstitutional or undemocratic, you would be right. Right now, the Education Department holds a portfolio of $1.7 trillion of student loans. So, Biden would be canceling roughly 9%. Now, here's an interesting substory to this student loan drama. It was the Obama administration that socialized student loans and stuck them into the Education Department. Prior to that, these loans were made by banks and other private lenders. Well, here's the thing. There isn't a person in the 4,400 staffers in the Education Department who know a thing about banking or credit analysis. So they've just been giving away free money, which, by the way, results in higher and higher tuition costs among colleges who enroll these debt-laden students. Now, you might say the private banker who understood credit analysis would be much better making these loans, and you would be right. But that's not what Obama wanted. He wanted to put all the loans in the Education Department so that, now get this, the interest payments would go to finance. Wait a minute. Obamacare. How about that for a clever banking solution? So now Mr. Biden wants to cancel all these loans and the interest payments, which will, of course, underfund Obamacare. But no matter, he'll just sell more debt to take care of that little problem. This is some high finance story, isn't it? The dumb leading the blind into more dumbness. Now, the final part of this sad tale is that whether Biden and his genius advisors have figured it out, that they might believe this student loan cancellation to be a very clever way to buy votes for the election, not even that's going to work. Think about this. In round numbers, 60% of the students across the country do not have college or grad school loans, or may have actually had them and paid them off legitimately like a responsible person. But about 40% do have the loans. So you might say the 60% is financing the 40%. That is not a good political ratio. One of my favorite Democratic pollsters, Doug Schoen, just wrote on Fox Digital a column entitled "Biden Screwed Up Life for Young Voters and It Could Cost Him." By the way, as a share of the total population in the United States, 13% have student loans and 87% have not. That's an even worse political calculus for Joe Biden. This is certainly the gang that can't shoot straight. They can't even figure out how to buy an election, but they sure know how to lose one. And that's my riff. All right. Join me now to, shall we say, chew on this, Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt. Mr. Schmidt, welcome back. I hope I didn't overstate the case, but this is bad finance and it's actually bad politics. These guys, this is the gang that can't shoot straight. Now, the question is, can you stop this latest several tranches of student loan bailouts?
Yeah, I think they'll get stopped at the Supreme Court. You know, when I was Attorney General of Missouri, we brought that lawsuit on the original student loan debt relief scam case and won because the Supreme Court knew this was an overreach. There wasn't a mandate from Congress to go do it. Missouri had standing to bring the lawsuit because Missouri actually has an entity called MOHELA, which is a little known loan servicing organization within the state. And that provided the standing, which what the case hinged on. So my guess is, as these cases, these challenges now they're being brought by other AGs, will follow a similar path and be struck down. But to your point, Larry, this is just simply a cynical election year ploy to try to go after younger voters. It's not going to work. It's also a middle finger to working class folks who either worked through college or didn't take debt at all, or, you know, a bunch of different scenarios. And it's all an effort to sort of cater to the people he's losing because his economy is so bad. It's twice as expensive now to buy a home. If you're trying to get into your first house, it's literally twice as expensive to do that because of interest rates than just a few years ago. Every time you go to the grocery store, every time you go to Home Depot, whatever it is, things are 20, 30, 40% more expensive. The cost to heat your home, the cost to fuel your car, everything's higher because of Joe Biden. And so here it is now, an election year. He knows, well, I don't know what he thinks is really going to happen, but ultimately this is going to be struck down, but it'll be after the election. And I think that's entirely the point by this cynical ploy.
But you know what's so dumb about this? I mean, the financing, these loans were stuck in the education department, socialized or nationalized, so they could provide revenues to support Obamacare. That's the part that I love. I loved it then, and I love that notion even more. Now, here's how dumb the Bidens are. The Bidens are taking that money out of Obamacare. Now, I know they'll just sell some more debt, Senator Schmidt. I understand that's the way the world works under this big government socialist administration. But I do find it somewhat amusing and awfully dumb.
Well, it's one big shell game. They don't take this seriously. We're $35 trillion in debt, Larry. You know this. And in a blink of an eye, we're going to be at 40. These numbers just simply aren't sustainable. We're paying about $1 trillion a year to pay for the interest of that debt, which is more than we pay on our military. We've got to get serious about it. But you can't do that when you have people like this who are in charge. And by the way, if you think this is such a good idea, Congress should have to vote on it.
Yes.
But there's a reason why they don't want to do that. You know, the Green New Deal is another example. Think of all these mandates they're pushing out now through administrative executive action that would never get the votes in the United States Senate or never get the votes in the House. This is all they've got left. And thankfully, hopefully the Supreme Court will strike this down like they did before, because that original case, Larry, that I brought as AG, that was $500 billion.
Mm.
That was $500 billion the taxpayer saved. And now he's trying to inch his way back into that territory with new schemes. But they're unlawful, and by the way, again, an insult to the American people.
So speaking of unconstitutional and unlawful, as I understand it, Republican senators are insisting on bringing the impeachment of DHS Secretary Mayorkas into the Senate for an actual trial. And if Chuck Schumer tries to stop it, you all are going to basically shut the Senate down until it gets going. Can you tell us a little more about this high-intentioned idea?
Yeah, so in the history of our country, Larry, in over 240-plus years, there has never been an instance, never, where articles of impeachment came over from the House of Representatives that the United States Senate didn't perform its constitutional duty of having a trial to the extent that somebody was actually still in office or alive. So it's never happened. So regardless of how Democrats may want to vote on this, convict or not convict, we're sworn in our constitutional order to have a trial. What Chuck Schumer is likely going to try to do next week is to file a motion to table or dismiss before there's a trial. It's never been done, so it's unconstitutional. It bulldozes any precedent, all because he's afraid of a couple news cycles. So we're going to use every procedural tool we have in the toolbox to get to a place, sadly, that we should just be at under normal circumstances, which is the Senate to perform its constitutional duty and judge this as the impeachment articles come over.
Well, you've got leverage, as I understand it. I'm just reading some articles. You and Tom Lee and some other, you all can stop business in the Senate until Mr. Schumer goes back to the correct constitutional approach, which is to deal with this trial.
Yeah, and we're going to do it. Again, regardless of how you feel, I mean, if politically speaking, Mayorkas belongs on the Mount Rushmore of worst cabinet members in the history of the United States. But from a legal perspective, he's also subverted the laws of the United States, whether it be parole or catch and release or a memo he issued urging employees to ignore longstanding immigration law. So there's a lot of evidence that can be presented. And as a legal matter, we should, vote to convict or not convict, depending on how you see it. But the fact is, it's really important that the Senate actually do this because, Chuck Schumer is sort of acting like a day trader here, very short-sighted. And if he does this, if he actually does this, if he nukes impeachment trials in the Senate, which is what he's proposing, there won't be one again. Mm. There won't be one again if the party in the Senate is the same party of official coming over. And we have a higher calling due to our Constitution. We've always abided by that. And it shouldn't change because Chuck Schumer's afraid of the facts in the news cycle that would highlight what a disaster the border's been. 9 million people here illegally, crime, fentanyl, national security crisis, all of those things because Secretary Mayorkas refuses to do his job.
Yeah, got it. The other one, Senator Schmidt, so interesting one to ask you. I'm drawing on your legal beagleness. Joe Biden is trying to unleash the whole federal bureaucracy to go out and harvest votes to reelect him. I mean, this is fantastic. Executive orders and exhortations. HHS registering voters, HUD doing registration and ballot harvesting and public housing projects. I love this. Education, pushing high schools and colleges to register and turn out votes. Wait a second. Agriculture Department, if you get SNAP or WIC, you know, the food programs, you're going to register voters and harvest them. Then here's one of my favorites, the Justice Department. You're going to love this. You may know this already because you're such a smart fella. The Bureau of Prisons and Marshal Services registering and encouraging inmates to vote. Ballot harvesting in the prison. Although I got to tell you, some of those prisoners might like Donald Trump's spirit a lot more than Joe Biden's. But anyway, whatever happened to the Hatch Act? What are these government bureaucrats doing? And I read someplace, tell me if I'm wrong, they're going to get paid administrative leave to go out for this ballot harvesting. I mean, this is democracy? Really?
Yeah, no, this is, by the way, one of the most important reasons why Donald Trump needs to be back into office, because I believe in my conversations with him, I know that he's committed to this, and I'm committed to being his partner. I know a lot of other senators are, which is to fundamentally change the administrative state, to dismantle it. It's gotten way too powerful. Our founders never intended these unelected bureaucrats who aren't accountable to anybody. You don't even know their name, or you never even heard of the agency. And they wield all this authority over your lives and your liberty. We've got to get back to the place where, if this is such a good idea, like I said earlier, Congress should vote on it. If you think you should ban gas stoves, make us vote on it. Be accountable to the voters, as opposed to some deputy undersecretary of some alphabet agency. It's totally ridiculous. But again, this is sort of the final stage of the Democrats' desperation. They know what's awaiting them in November. This is my belief. They know they're going to lose. They've lost folks. The Republican Party now, I'm happy to say, is a multi-ethnic, working class party, and they see what's happening to our country, and it's time to save it.
I agree. By the way, I think the prisoners are going to vote for Trump. Anyway, we will see. Senator, as a joke, but I think they like his spirit. The prisoners aren't going to vote for some wussy big government socialist guy. I don't think so. But Senator Eric Schmidt, thank you, sir. It's great to see you.
Take care, Larry.
All right, take care. All right, folks, coming up, unfortunately, the Dow tanks almost 500 points. I think that's the worst of the year. Higher inflation's a problem. There aren't going to be any interest rate cuts. J.P. Morgan came in light. We got the great Kevin Hassett, former CEO chair, is going to talk about it. I'm Kudlow. Boy, those bureaucrats are getting paid to go out and harvest votes for Joe Biden. Can you imagine that? It's not good. Not good at all.
Rough nights, bad days are always there for you. Good days are there.
Buddy Niner is a Department of Defense firefighter who served in the Air National Guard and with the Marines in Afghanistan. And he was looking for a little help when he returned home.
We had people that didn't come home. One day on Facebook, I was scrolling through, and I ended up seeing some puppies that were named after those Marines and Navy corpsmen. And I called down here and said, I hope these puppies are going to be something great because they have big shoes to fill.
What Buddy found was Warrior Canine Connection, a program that helps veterans reintegrate into their families and communities through the healing power of man's best friend.
This is Bee, my service dog. I paired with her in July of 22, and she comes with me to work, the farm, at home, with the family, everywhere.
Each of our dogs, you know, helps dozens and dozens of veterans.
Rick Yount, who has decades of experience in animal-assisted therapy, founded his organization in 2008. He calls it mission-based trauma recovery.
What do you hear from your veterans?
The mission to train a dog for another vet is what makes it really compelling for veterans to do things that they would never do otherwise.
Before a dog can be trained, it needs a good upbringing. And that's where puppy parents come in. Molly Morelli is in charge of that. And she says the process starts long before these little guys are even born.
Tell us how important those puppy raiser families are.
They are volunteering their time, their home, their families to raise these dogs to ultimately turn around and have them be placed. They are some of the most selfless people I've ever met.
Puppy parents volunteer to house and raise service dogs for nearly 2 years before they are placed with their forever veteran.
Get your leash.
Yount says vets are often trainers for the young pups, teaching them to assist and serve another vet, which often helps to heal their own invisible wounds.
It involves having these dogs learn to accept the world as a safe place and to be comfortable around crowds. So these are very much many of the issues that veterans are struggling with themselves.
The program has impacted Buddy so much, he says he's going back to school to become a full-fledged dog trainer himself.
A lot of times, like a lot of veterans, they try to withdraw from society, do their own thing, just spend time just by themselves, whereas when you have a service dog, it gives a lot of veterans a purpose to get up every day.
It's not overstating it to say they're being saved because of the work you're doing here.
Yeah, it's not overstating it at all. A veteran sleeping for the first time through the night because of having a sweet dog in their bed. It's purpose.
Next time you have a cough, you may want to reach for the honey. According to a new study, honey could be just as good as over-the-counter medicine to treat colds and coughs. Researchers at Oxford University's Medical School and Nuffield Department of Primary Care Health Sciences in the UK looked at several studies about the effectiveness of honey to treat upper respiratory tract infections, such as the common cold. They concluded honey was, quote, superior to usual care for the improvement of symptoms of upper respiratory tract infections. Researchers say further high-quality placebo-controlled trials are needed. The study was published in the BMJ Evidence-Based Medicine. For this and other stories, check out foxnews.com. Thanks for watching Fox. Keep it here.
Nobody.
The consumer is strong. The balance sheets are strong.
Brings you America's business news.
There's so much going on.
And what it means for you.
We want to get some breaking news to you right now, Fox Business Alert.
Like Fox Business, keeping you ahead of the curve.
All the insider selling by some of the richest people on earth.
With insight into the impact of U.S. and global markets.
That's where the recipe for inflation comes
from. The people you can trust.
Let's have some fun with this.
Fox Business, America's business network.
All right, Dow plunging big time today, about 500 points. Let's go straight to our market expert, Jerry Willis, on today's sell-off. Jerry,
yeah,
what do you got?
Pretty bad sell-off there. Stocks tumbling as banks kicked off the first quarter earnings season. And inflation fears they were rising again. Take a look at the Dow here, down 475 points. That's over a percentage point. The S&P down 75, the NASDAQ down 267. Ouch. J.P. Morgan Chase reporting that futures net interest income, that's a key measure of what the bank makes on loans, could come in short of analyst expectations. The stock down 6%, shaving 70 points off the Dow. Wells Fargo, Citi also falling in today's trading. JPM CEO Jamie Dimon warning that persistent inflationary pressures continue to weigh on the economy. And contributing today to those inflation worries, rising oil prices, which touched a six-month high on rising tensions in the Middle East. And finally, a warning for you middle-income tax filers as tax day approaches. More than half of audit targets, 63%, earned $200,000 or less. So much for Biden's promise that the wealthy were in the audit crosshairs. He said 400,000. It's actually 200,000.
Sure. He can't add either, but Willie Sutton, famous economist, once said, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. Why do you go after the middle class? Because that's where the money is. Jerry Willis, the best of the best. Thanks ever so much. All right, with us now, Kevin Hassett, former chair of the Council of Economic Advisors, distinguished fellow at the Hoover Institution, and author of the most important book of the century. It's called The Drift, about stopping socialism. Kevin, you're almost developing a perfect storm here. You had another bad inflation number today. Import prices up 0.4 in March after 0.3 in February and 0.7 in January. You know all about inflation over the past 3 months. CPI about 4.5% at an annual rate. What's going on here, Kevin Hassett?
Right. Well, it's going exactly the way you and I have been saying it would go for the last 2 years, really all the way back. I went back and looked. It was September 2022 when we started to talk about the 10 steps to stagflation. And we're stuck at step 8, which I just wrote about at National Review this week, which is that price inflation and wage inflation stick together. Price inflation doesn't go below wage inflation. And right now they're both running between 4.5% and 5%, way above the Fed's target. I think that in January, I remember once you asked me on the show, Kevin, is there going to be any rate cut this year? And I said no. Mm-hmm. And I think the market now sees that that's probably true. But my guess is that you're going to have to see rate hikes. Inflation is accelerating so much. And if there's some uncertainty in the Middle East, then that's going to drive energy prices up even more. That's going to create serious pressure on the Fed to go up maybe as much as another percentage point if you look at the sort of rules of thumb about where interest rates should be right now, given inflation.
You know what's interesting about that point, and we've been talking about that on the air, Breitbart's John Carney, myself, Larry Summers, right. I think, started this when he said there's a zero, there's a non-zero probability that the rate hike will be the next move. And then our dear friend Larry Lindsay was writing back in 2016 when Janet Yellen was Fed chair. She raised rates right after the election at the December meeting. Mm-hmm. And so the question, Kevin, right. is, might history repeat itself? Be tough for them to raise rates. I mean, Biden was out yesterday, and I think he may have repeated it today, that he expects the Fed to cut rates. He just didn't know what month. But maybe right. they'll wait. But the next move might be higher rates after the election.
Right. I think that especially if Trump wins, you know, I think that rate hike, I think President Trump always felt like Janet Yellen was being partisan at the Fed. And it's one reason why he didn't reappoint her. And I think in retrospect, she probably was right. And so I think what the Fed should do is ignore politics, look at the data. If you do that, then right now you should hike, not cut. And there's really nothing I can see in the data that would lead to rate reductions unless something like a black swan event like the Middle East got way, way worse. And it turned into a hot war between Israel and Iran or something. I mean, if that were to happen, markets would drop 20-30%, and then the Fed probably would start cutting rates. But I think absent a really big black swan event, then the data are really out of control on the upside. Larry Summers is right about that.
You know, Kevin, the last point I want to make is you're still seeing a tremendous rate of government spending. I mean, so much of the GDP is coming out. Government spending into consumers, increasing demand, but we're not increasing supply. Business investment is virtually flat. And so they're still doing it, Kevin. The number came out earlier this week. The first half of fiscal 24, 6 months in, you're running a $1 trillion deficit. Okay, and it's not lower revenues, it's higher spend. So we could hit $2 trillion again. That's an inflationary pressure from a president who wants the Fed to drop rates. He's really causing inflationary pressures.
Right. And over the next decade, the CBO now says that debt held by the public is going from $26 trillion to $48
trillion. Right.
Think about it. All the way to $48 trillion. And that big increase in debt, you know where it leads. It leads to inflation.
Yeah.
And in fact, if the Fed doesn't inflate that away, then the country might have to default out its debt. I mean, that's so much debt, $48 trillion, that it puts an unbelievable amount of pressure on the Fed. And my guess is that what's going to have to happen after the next election is that Congress is going to have to rebalance those things, because there's just no way the U.S. could be on this path to Weimar Germany and stay on it for another decade the way the CBO projects.
You're right. It's a major policy change going to be necessary. Kevin Hassett, thank you ever so much. We're going to talk tax day on Monday, which is terrific with you. All right, folks, coming up next, Donald Trump wants earlier and more debates with Joe Biden. So we've got David Bossi and Rich Lowry to weigh in, and plus Sarah Carter on Biden's support of Israel versus Iran. Is it really ironclad or not? And by the way, tough story. How many hostages are really alive being held by Hamas? I'm Kudlow. Please stick around. Lots more to do, folks.
The The Evening Edit with Elizabeth McDonald.
One of the biggest goals of the show is to look out for Americans. We pull back the curtain and show you what's really going on.
Elizabeth McDonald is breaking the biggest stories. The Evening Edit on Fox Business. Invested in you.
AI is rolling out across healthcare systems nationwide. It's already helping doctors and nurses diagnose, treat, and monitor patients. And some AI tech is even able to spot potential problems well before a doctor could. The National Bureau of Economic Research estimates AI could also cut 5 to 10% in U.S. healthcare spending. We're talking about saving $360 billion within the next 5 years. Tech companies also see a big way to make some money here. One company looking to capitalize, it's a company called Regard. Its software aims to be an AI co-pilot for doctors. It processes data, helping with diagnosing, and the company says it's already deployed its tech to some 30 hospitals. But getting patients on board with this, that could be a bit of a tougher sell. A recent survey from Pew Research found 60% of people would be uncomfortable if their provider relied on AI for care.
Patients simply don't trust a machine over a human being, but they are welcoming of a machine to assist a surgeon or a physician in making a diagnosis or remedying care.
Now, experts we spoke with, they agree that doctors aren't going to be replaced by AI anytime soon. However, this technology is advancing really fast here, so we're going to see more AI and tech and everything from EKGs to X-ray readings, and this technology is just rolling out pretty much across the medical field.
Welcome to Ocean House. A true gem nestled in the heart of New England. This luxury oceanfront hotel sits on an expansive 13 beautiful acres, perfectly positioned between the bustling cities of Manhattan and Boston. Indulging in a stay here has endless possibilities, from cruising in a complimentary Mercedes-Benz to playing a game of croquet on their championship lawn, to enjoying one of the most spectacular and pristine stretches of beach on the East Coast. Let's go inside to see firsthand what all the excitement is truly about.
Welcome to Ocean House.
Thank you. Hello.
Good morning. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Judge Janine.
Welcome, Judge Janine. My name is Dan Hirsch. I'm the President and Managing Director here at Ocean House.
It is beautiful. I have to tell you, coming in and seeing that beautiful yellow is just like warm and sunshiny.
Oh, thank you. That's called Ocean House Yellow.
It is. Yeah. Okay.
Well, let me show you around. So this is our lobby. This is what I would say is our sacred spot of the hotel. The original hotel was built in 1868, and this is very similar to the layout of the original hotel.
Now, 1868, this was built right after the Civil War, Reconstruction, so there's a real history here. But you rebuilt, and then you made it smaller, I understand.
Well, we reduced the number of guest rooms, for sure, but we actually built down into the ground so that we keep the exterior of the building looking to be about the same size. So a lot of the windows are in the exact same location as the original hotel. Mm-hmm. It's essentially a replica. And there's over 5,000 pieces within the original hotel that's built back into Ocean House today. So the current hotel is a modern rebuild of the original hotel. The original hotel was built in 1868, but it closed in 2003. It was essentially irreparable after 135 years of people enjoying. So when our owner, Chuck Royce, bought the property, he wanted to rebuild it and just renovate it, but it was pretty much dilapidated. There was 159 rooms. Out of those rooms, only 59 were even inhabitable. The infrastructure of the whole hotel was essentially rotting and molding. So he had to rebuild it, but he really wanted to keep the spirit of Ocean House and the history.
A Civil War era hotel. I mean, that's incredible.
And it hit a couple of hurricanes through that time. So
yep.
We rebuilt in 2010. It took about 6 years.
Thanks for watching Fox on Yes. For the latest headlines, check out foxbusiness.com and foxnews.com.
What a play. The sports business booming. Find out where investors can score big opportunities. Plus, big tech fault lines. Why Kathy Wood is holding on despite impending uncertainty on Barron's Roundtable. Brought to you by Global X, Beyond Ordinary ETFs.
All right, Donald Trump wants earlier and more debates with Joe Biden. He's also raising a ton of money, and he's really picking up steam with black male voters as well as Latins. Here to talk about it all, David Bossi, president of Citizens United, co-chair of the 2024 RNC convention, and former 2016 Trump deputy campaign manager, and Rich Lowry, editor-in-chief of the National Review. Gentlemen, welcome. David Bossi, more debates and earlier debates. Guy's got a point, doesn't he?
He certainly does. Anytime, anywhere. That's what President Trump has said. He wants to take on Joe Biden. He wants to make sure that the American people get an opportunity to see the two of them, because if this campaign is on policy, it is, if it is on the last 3.5 years of a horrendous Biden administration record, Donald Trump is going to win come November. And that's what he wants to educate the American people on. The Trump White House, the Trump administration versus the Biden administration. Are you better off today than you were under his administration?
Rich, the first scheduled debate, this is off a Breitbart article, was in mid-September.
Yeah.
But the early voting starts when? Before like, then?
Yeah, it's not that far away, the early voting period. Dave would know more than I do. But look, the problem is the guy who doesn't want early debates and a lot of debates is Joe Biden, right? I think you'll be lucky to get one debate out of him. And it might be he finds an excuse not to do any, because standing up for 90 minutes against Donald Trump at 9 o'clock at night, will, just to put it politely, is not this president's script.
You mean they could give him some of those B-12 shots he had
maybe
for the State of the Union?
Yeah. It's one thing to do it and then read a teleprompter.
But no one believed it. I mean, his numbers went down after that debate, so not even B-12 helped him.
Yeah, so they'll use every argument. There. You know, if Trump gets convicted in the Bragg case, they'll say he's a convicted felon. If he's not convicted, they'll say he's an insurrectionist. They'll use whatever excuse, I believe, to minimize his time, or maybe not to do any debates at all.
Okay. David Bossi, I got another one for you. The big story in the Wall Street Journal, a news story from their polling, Biden losing support among black men and Hispanic voters. Hispanic voters, by the way, want to build a wall down at the border. That came out of the Wall Street Journal poll. That was new information to me. I'm not surprised, but I'm saying they are. Meanwhile, black voters, they're sitting the short end of the stick, and they feel that the illegals are taking their job. Now, this is powerful stuff if Biden is losing black supporters.
He's hemorrhaging. He's hemorrhaging amongst black males and females. I think we all saw the incredibly powerful video of President Trump walking into the Chick-fil-A in Atlanta a couple of days ago. And organically, these young black women gravitate to him and say, "We are with you." And they want to take pictures with him. It was an incredible sight. But if you look at the America First economic agenda and the record that he had while he was president, it helped the African-American community, and it helped the Hispanic community. And that is what they are coming to realize, because to your point, Hispanics who came here legally want others to do so as well.
Right.
And the African-Americans are looking at those jobs, which are harder and harder for everyone, all walks of life, to find and get. They are resentful that others by the Biden administration are being allowed to enter and take them away.
Rich Lowry, by the way, you know, is the Lord's chicken.
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
I think maybe there's a case you can make that Trump should do nothing else until Election Day except for campaign in fast food restaurants and pizza parks. He's so great in that setting, right? It's amazing.
He's really so
good. And this is a huge thing, and Dave's exactly right. These voters, they care about other issues that other people care about. Mm. The economy, the border, crime. Mm. And it may be, we'll see. I mean, these numbers are so astonishing, some of them. You want to see it actually happen in an election to believe it. But it may be that this reflex, just vote as a block, is going away, and there's more a reflex to vote ideologically. And a lot of these voters, they're patriots, they're cultural conservatives, they don't like open borders.
Are you familiar with this NPR story?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is the editor, senior editor of NPR, a guy named Berliner, who still works there, did a tally.
If I were him, I'd be checking my 401k.
Well, that's the thing. They haven't fired him yet.
Yeah.
But basically broke the story, I guess, on Substack someplace. Anyway, there's 87 registered Democrats and zero registered Republicans on National Public Radio. They get hundreds of millions of dollars of subsidies from the federal government. Trump is saying stop the money. Got a point there. I mean, 87 and nothing, even by modern standards. Yeah. I bet you have more Democrats in the National Review.
A lot of people would say
that. You got a couple Democrats anyway. Yeah. You had me. I was a Democrat once.
So this isn't exactly breaking news, right? This, Dave, you, me, we've lived this our entire careers, but it's astonishing seeing it from this guy at NPR, who is a liberal, right? He voted for Biden. He says enthusiastically.
But is disgusted
by the bias. And, of course, in this day and age, when you have podcasts, when you have serious radio, why do we need to be subsidizing progressive radio?
Several hundred million dollars worth of federal funding. So we're going to have 87 nothing Democrats over Republicans. Bossy, I got one more for you. Trump raising a fortune just in this past week. My total is $50 million in Mar-a-Lago. He made $50 million and $15 million in Buckhead, which wants secede from Hotlanta, I can't blame them, and Orlando. So Trump made $65 million, and the week isn't over yet, Dave Bossy. What do you make of that?
It is astonishing. President Trump is raising huge amounts of money, hand over fist, and it is so important for these donors to come together because everyone understands the importance. This is an inflection point for this country. Joe Biden must be sent back to the basement in Delaware, and Donald Trump must win for our children and our grandchildren's futures if they're going to have one.
Well, I think Biden's doing his best to lose, and I think Trump's doing his best to win. Well, how about that? I conclude on a Friday afternoon. Dave Bossy, Rich Lowry, you're both fabulous old friends. Thanks very much. All right, folks, we're going to switch gears, talk a little bit about Israel. Some very difficult stories, but joining me is the wonderful Sarah Carter, Fox News contributor. Sarah, great to see you. Thanks for doing this. So one thing I want to ask you, you've covered
great
this beat
you,
quite
Larry.
A bit. You know, Joe Biden goes back and forth on this. He's kind of antagonistic, almost betraying Israel. No, you know, don't go into Rafah. Don't go into southern Gaza. Lots of humanitarian aid. We want to have a hostage exchange. And then yesterday with the Japanese prime minister and again today, he said his commitment to Israel's security is, quote, ironclad because, of course, Iran may attack Israel because Israel took out some key Quds terrorist commanders of Iran. Sarah, how do you see this? Which Biden do we believe? The Biden that's been criticizing Netanyahu or the Biden now who says, what's his phrase, ironclad? Who's right here?
Well, I think we shouldn't believe Biden at all, but let me explain why he did this, pivot, this complete 360 reversal. I was in Israel not too long ago, just last month, when Biden drew the red line and basically stated to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, if you cross this red line, if you go into Rafah, there will be heck to pay from the United States, and put Israel really on the defensive with the U.S. Mm-hmm. and placed Israel in a really precarious position. But what happened right now, this reversal, is based on actionable intelligence, Larry. So basically, he undermined Israel. Iran once again took the upper hand. Israel targets this general of the Quds Force. And all of a sudden, the United States intelligence agencies, the CIA, the DIA, and everyone else is getting information that Iran is going to imminently target Israel. But it's not just about Israel. It's about the United States. And all of a sudden, this terrible foreign policy that President Biden has been spilling across the globe that has been creating this incredible instability everywhere. I mean, it's like a complete reversal from the Trump years. All of a sudden, I think he's getting advice from people within his own administration saying, sir, you better step back. You better back Israel now because we have an imminent knowledge that an attack is happening. Now, that attack will probably happen through the proxies. I was on the phone all day today with sources inside Israel. They're talking about Hamas or Hezbollah probably pushing forward with an attack for Iran inside Israel. But Prime Minister Netanyahu certainly isn't going to stand by and allow this to happen. Well, we saw that was the reason why he targeted that general.
Besides the word ironclad support, he used the word don't. Now, the last time I heard don't was he was telling the Russians not to invade Ukraine. And that didn't work out so well. In fact, our John Roberts, I remember him saying as news reporter, John's one of the best in business. He says, don't is what I tell my dog to stop pulling my sock. But the Russians didn't buy it, and I don't know if the Iranians are going to buy it. I mean, how much credibility is here? What will the United States do? I mean, the other thing, you know, I'm watching the Brent crude oil market because those guys will know if there's an Iranian attack coming. But Biden doesn't want higher gasoline prices. I mean, I think that's his absolute motive for the summer. I hate to be cynical, but I'm telling you, he doesn't want higher gasoline prices if the Middle East blows up. Maybe I'm being too hard on him, but I don't think so. Sarah, one other point.
There's no, a very I don't think
mean,
you are.
There's a mean, mean story. I don't mean mean, but tough story in the Wall Street Journal today. How many hostages are still alive? Hamas refuses to tell us. I'm talking about the Israeli hostages, but there are also a half a dozen American hostages, as you know all too well.
Correct.
Many of them have died. Many of them have been killed. Some of them are being used as human shields, Sarah. This is potentially a heartbreaking story.
I've got to tell you, Larry, it is one of the most gut-wrenching stories that I've been a part of. When I was in Israel just last month, I met with some of the families of the hostages at the hostage center in Israel, and it was terrible. I couldn't even imagine being in their position, not knowing whether or not your loved one is alive, not knowing whether or not they will be released. What we know is this, that when the intermediaries were basically asked for the ceasefire, that would be Egypt as well as Qatar, and they asked, you know, whether or not Hamas had 40 hostages that they could trade with Israel. Hamas said that they basically could not turn over 40 hostages that would be alive. So that is very devastating right now for the families. I think we need to wait and see. Nobody has the exact number right now. I think even Israel is waiting to see what is going to transpire from any kind of hostage exchange. And I think we just need to sit back and wait. I know the families are devastated, but
Sarah,
look, I have hope that some of these hostages will come home.
I got a heartbreak. You know about that. But you're right. This is a heartbreaking story. Sarah Carter, thank you ever so much. Folks, quick break coming up. Governor, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. Biden today, more attacks on fossil fuels. Unbelievable story when Kudlow returns. And we all bleed for this Israeli hostage story and the American hostages. Lord knows what's happened.
We view the world the same way.
I'm sure we'll have some disagreements, but you don't want to get her mad.
No, you don't.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business.
Did you know that in the United States, about one in four kids does not live with their dad? That number has increased significantly over the last 50 years when less than 15 lived in a fatherless household.
All right, our next guest recognized that crisis and has been trying to flip that narrative on family life with his podcast for years now. And now he's out with a brand new book. You're seeing it slide onto the screen called First Class Fatherhood.
How many fathers, you run a podcast of the same name, how many fathers have you interviewed? And have you, what big takeaways have you had?
One of the big takeaways is that we're a lot more alike than we are different. The media tries to pull us apart, but fatherhood is something that is universal. So many dads, we have all this stuff in common. And one thing that's causing this fatherless crisis, too, is co-parenting situations gone south, bad relationships. So I've had a lot of dads come on the podcast, in the book First Class Fatherhood, guys like Tony Hawk, been on the show twice. Father of six kids, blended family. He talks about the challenges of the co-parenting situation, offers some solutions. I mean, I got guys like James Buster Douglas, who knocked out Mike Tyson. 30 years ago when he did that, the first thing he said was, Dad, this one's for you. I love you. And his dad was a father figure to so many people in their lives, and he didn't even know that growing up in Columbus. But if a child doesn't have a father in their life, you can step up and be that father figure for them.
Right. So here's an example. Dana White, UFC fame, he said, nothing else matters. The only real legacy, the only thing that means anything is what your kids have to say about you.
Dana White is awesome, and he invited my wife and I to the UFC. But Dana White's the guy who said, everyone always asks me about my legacy, and they think it's tied to the UFC and all this. No, he said, when it's all over and I'm lying there in that box and whoever shows up to my funeral shows up, the only legacy that truly matters is what my kids get up there and say about me as a father, and that's it. That's all that matters.
That's exactly right. Here's another one. Jocko Willink, friend of the show, great Navy SEAL. If you were to ask me what type of discipline I use with my kids, I would say my primary tool is that I ask them questions.
Jocko, I love the Navy SEAL community. The Navy SEAL Swim, one of the best events. I know you're a part of that. Jocko Willink is the go-to guy for discipline. He wrote the book on discipline. Mm-hmm. So I was intrigued by his answer saying that, you know what, my best disciplinary tool is to ask questions. What do you expect to happen as an outcome here? What's the long-term consequence going to be of this action? So listening, asking questions was his biggest disciplinary tool.
Right, and they get angry sometimes. Enough questions. Why are you interviewing me? Marcus Luttrell says this: don't ever be embarrassed or ashamed to not know something. Ask around, ask for advice, and don't be afraid to adopt something that somebody else does that is working, right?
Yeah, the lone survivor. Yeah, Marcus Luttrell, he's right on point there. Don't be embarrassed and shame. Seek advice. Listen to podcasts like First Class Fatherhood. Pick up the book, First Class Fatherhood, because guys have been through this, and success leaves clues. Find guys that have had some success in some areas that you're struggling with. Listen to them. Follow the advice. Don't be ashamed that you're picking up where someone else
left
off.
You're going to find somebody else that has a similar life situation to you. And be able to address those to your own life.
100%. And that's what the book is all about. There's so many. It crosses all spectrums. If you find a dad you don't like, turn the page. There's going to be a dad in there you're interested in listening
turn
to.
Turn the page. All right, Al. Thanks so much.
All right,
great seeing you. Congratulations on the book.
Congratulations.
Thank you, guys. Honored to be on.
Ever throw anything away? You don't have to answer. It's a rhetorical question. Of course you have. We all do. Because garbage is the great leveler of our society. Rich or poor, young or old, eco-friendly or not, if you exist, you make it. And together, we make a lot. Every week, Americans create more than 5 million tons of trash. Enough to fill a baseball stadium from top to bottom 14 times. But it shouldn't come to that. Thanks to the 200,000 men and women whose job it is to keep all that trash under control. It's a constant uphill battle that leaves little time for anything else, like, say, making a television show.
All right, let's bring in North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. Mr. Burgum, as always, sir, it's great to see you. So another fossil fuel attack. You probably know about this. It's incredible. Biden is raising the royalties on federal lands from 12.5% to 17%. Okay. $1.5 billion. Then the minimum bid for drilling leases per acre has been raised from $2 to $10. And then another one is the minimum bond for a lease. $10,000 goes to $150,000. All this stuff's going to drive out the wildcatters and the small business, and you're not going to help the production of fossil fuels at all. This crowd never stops, Governor Burgum.
Well, Larry, it's infuriating because, and we know this in North Dakota because we've been fighting the federal government. Federal government is required to hold quarterly lease sales every quarter so that Americans that want to produce energy can bid for the opportunity in an auction to produce that energy. Every president since Harry Truman has held those every quarter. Biden did not hold one in the first 8 quarters that he was in office. North Dakota sued and we won and required them to hold the leases. And now they're doing everything they can to essentially tax anyone with higher rates who wants to actually do that development. Mm-hmm. And you might say, well, hey, this is interesting, but what are we looking at right now? Energy prices are skyrocketing. He's trying to reduce U.S. supply under this fantasy. The whole premise of all of this, of no drilling on federal land, the premise is that somehow that's good for the environment. But when you displace clean energy production in the United States, it doesn't reduce, it just reduces the supply. It doesn't reduce the demand. That demand is being filled by Iran, by Venezuela, by Russia. We're making our adversaries rich. I mean, Biden's policy is helping make Putin to become the richest guy in the world through this green fantasy. And then who's paying for that? American citizens, because it's driving the cost of energy up at home. It's bad for consumers. It's bad for America. It's great for our adversaries. I feel like that China or Russia actually wrote Biden's energy policy.
Well, so I got a picture. I don't know whether you can see it or not, but we're going to put it up on the full screen. It's from today's Wall Street Journal editorial. The prices of electricity have gone up 29.4% since Mr. Biden took office. See how flat they were for years, including the Trump years, and have jumped up astronomical 29%. And as you know, Governor, other prices, including gasoline, have all gone up by more than that. Some of these prices, 35 to 40%. So that's, you know, you talk about middle class working folks. I don't care. We were just talking about how black men are going for Trump. Latinos are going for Trump. White working class going for Trump, et cetera, et cetera. This is one reason. This is the affordability crisis. They can't even get electric power. They don't want EVs. They want their gas-powered cars, et cetera, et cetera. And it's costing them a fortune, sir.
Well, absolutely. And not only is President Trump going to make America great again, he's going to make America affordable again. That chart that you're showing is actually a exact explicit explanation of the Biden policies. When you restrict supply and then also increase demand, because for electricity, they're subsidizing 500,000 EV charging stations. They're subsidizing batteries where the rare earth minerals are going to come from China. If you're subsidizing all of that, then you're going to have more demand. And of course, we have AI on top of that. There's more demand at the time they're trying to shut down all the electricity in the country. So who's going to be voting for President Trump? Anybody who puts gas in their car, food on their table, or has to pay an electric bill is going to be voting for President Trump, because Biden's policies are hurting the people that need it the most.
Governor Doug Burgum, as always, sir, we appreciate you coming on. Talk soon. Folks, I'll be right back with my last word.
Rite Aid announcing it is closing another 53 additional stores in 9 states as part of the company's bankruptcy proceedings. Stores in California, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Virginia are on the list. Rite Aid filed for bankruptcy in October to try and stem and deal with their high debt. Target is now using secret AI-powered cameras to crack down on shoplifting at self-checkout. The new system uses cameras and sensors to detect items that shoppers did not scan and notify them. It's called TrueScan and also has a system to catch repeat offenders. The updated scanners are expected to reach all stores by the end of the year. And the best fast food restaurants in America have been ranked. Coming in at number one is Culver's. Second place goes to Shake Shack, followed by In-N-Out Burger, Whataburger, and Raising Cane's rounds out the top five. Meanwhile, the president of In-N-Out says she went toe-to-toe in company meetings to keep costs low. This as California's fast food industry sees menu prices soaring amid inflation and the Golden State's new minimum wage hike. That's business. In New York, I'm CJ Papa.
Well, here is where sargassum from Fort Lauderdale's beaches end up. It is smelly, as you would expect, and there's bugs hovering over it. However, it's not here to sit in a pile, but instead transform and serve a new purpose. The amount of sargassum multiplying in our ocean and washing up on the beaches in 2023 might be the largest yet. The University of South Florida and NASA tracks it via satellite, noting 6.1 tons of it out there spanning over 5,000 miles in large clumps.
As we've taken the data in recently,
they're noticing this year's numbers compared to last year's aligns with USF's expectation.
So about three times as much so far, which could taper off or could remain at a strong pace.
And it's got to go somewhere, so they chose a local park.
As you can see from this point here, it's delivered from the beach in our trucks. It is taken and is loaded on that hill up there where it sits and is covered for 120 days. And it composts, it warms up, and it breaks down. So we get a yard for every 10 yards we put in, and then we put it on the processed pile, and there it is made into good dirt.
Providing free soil for the city to use, even giving residents access to take some home at no charge.
This is the gold standard with respect to composting seaweed in the state of Florida. We're the only ones that hold a registration for composting seaweed with the Department of Environmental Protection, and we plan on doing it till we can't anymore. It's the best standard that we have. It works really great, and we save $300,000 to $350,000 in savings with trucking costs and landfill space.
And they could be composting a lot of sargassum in the coming months. Experts at the University of South Florida expect that peak between May and July. Reporting here from Fort Lauderdale in Florida, I'm Brandi Campbell, Fox Weather.
Fox airs all over the world, including in Canada. So if you live there or are visiting, keep watching Fox on Cogeco. And for a list of hotels airing Fox, visit foxnewshotels.com.
When news breaks.
And we begin with this Fox News alert.
America turns to Fox News Channel.
We are feeling the impact all across the country.
Stream it now on the Fox News International app. It's the place for top political coverage.
It's a very big day here at the White House.
With must-see insight and analysis you won't get anywhere else.
We will never be the media mob.
And stay on top of the U.S. markets with Fox Business. Watch your favorite shows live or get them on demand. Download the Fox News International app now from the Apple or Google Play stores. Also available on Amazon Fire.
You know, student loan costs, energy and electricity costs, inflation and mortgage rate costs. The middle class is getting creamed in this country.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform. And watch directly on outkick.com/watch.